Want to try a free sample?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
You only eat after you're walking 10,000 steps.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Signos.com. Signos.com with code SPARK. Signos.
He was a preacher who couldn't resist temptation.
The priest is accused of killing Sister Margaret Ann Paul in the chapel.
The strongest of cases against a powerful preacher in a town of true believers.
The legal age for marriage is at puberty. I'm not married to any teenage girls who don't want to be. I'm 74 years old.
I don't remember reading that in the Bible, sir.
You don't know anything about the Bible.
And he kept stabbing and smiling.
410 wounds, scars upon scars.
You're listening to Seven Deadly Sinners.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. It's our first listener stories episode. Yay! Thank you guys so much for sending your stories in, and we want to keep doing more of these. So if you have a story related to really anything, church, cult, false prophet, pyramid scheme, murder adjacent, ghost story, listen, now we are opening them wide open because I just love a good story. So please send them to 7deadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to remain anonymous, just let us know and we will totally honor that. Just send us a note in your email if you don't want your name included or you want us to change it, whatever. We are super excited to hear from you. Okay, so we are done with season two. And for the next few weeks, we will be doing bonus episodes like this listener story. And we will be releasing the insane trailer for season three next week. And then the following week, a very special episode will be coming out. And like emotional interlude, if you will, before we go into the very dark season three cases. I mean, I'm talking cases so dark and potentially so dangerous that I'm actually a tad nervous to cover two of them, specifically for fear of retaliation. But what the hell? You know,
we're going to have to hide out in Colorado.
Don't say where we are. You can't hide out.
Colorado's a big state.
Okay, whatever.
And we're in the middle of nowhere enough.
That's Greg Hunter, by the way, the man behind the music, the editor of this podcast, co-producer, and also my life partner in crime. We're going to be
podcasting.
And yeah, that's actually how you swindled your way into my life, you creep. Anywho.
It's true.
So make sure you're subscribed to Seven Deadly Sinners so you don't miss an episode. And especially the exciting, fun bonus episode coming next week that is kind of in the vein of Seven Heavenly Virtues, which is it's going to be like a very harrowing and cool survival story before season three begins the week of April 12th. And that's it's going to be really good and really dark and really cultish and
scariest yet.
And really, let's just say some people that have reported on some of these cases are not alive anymore.
Because of car bombs and assassinations.
One was a plane crash. Anywho. So, all right. So Greg and I are going to share your stories written by you. And yeah, I'm going to go first, if that's okay.
Go for it.
Okay. So this email was titled, Growing Up in a Cult Church That Also Included a Few Ghosts. A Girl After My Own Heart. Okay. So she says, hey, I don't know where to begin, so I guess I'll give some backstory. I grew up in a non-denominational church in a fairly small town. The church started out in my aunt's house with a few families. It slowly outgrew her house, so we moved into what is ironically one of the super haunted buildings in the area. I can't figure out how to say this, Sequim Dungeness Schoolhouse.
Sounds creepy. I don't know how to say it either.
Okay. It's Sequim. Like sequin, but sequim. I don't know.
Sounds like synonym. Probably made up word.
But that was a made up word, so I don't know. Who knows, sequin maybe too.
I digress.
Okay. There were always dead flies all over the place, and it's a huge building, so the kids would just run around while the adults were having night church. So yes, my first ghost encounter was during church. For whatever reason, probably ghosts, we moved out of that building and into what was at the time the local Boys and Girls Club. I'm not sure why the locations are relevant, but that's how I remember a lot of the weird happenings. It was at the Boys and Girls Club that I was first told the story of David and Bathsheba. I was probably 6 or 7 at the time. My sister, who was 12 or 13 at the time, also remembers feeling incredibly uncomfortable as the 60-something elder of the church gave us graphic details of David lusting after a woman, trying to kill her husband after getting her pregnant, and how God punished them by killing their baby. Guess he wasn't super pro-life back then. The elder slash children's church teacher never held back when it came to sex or rape in the Bible. It was traumatic because my first introduction to sex was basically just, quote, women are whores. Men can do what they want, and if you mess up, God will kill your babies. Good lessons for a 6-year-old. My mom had been married before and had 2 sons from a previous marriage. This was irrelevant to me. My brothers were not half-brothers. I think she's saying they were really close. However, in spite of my father having adopted them and raised them as his own, they'd left the church and were, quote, heathens. When I was 8 or 9, the same elder, we'll call him Albert, decided to tell us the story of Revelations. He told us that at the end of times there will be a war, and during that war, we, the Christians, would have a battle against all non-believers. I remember Albert looking directly at me and saying, quote, it doesn't matter if it's your sibling. You will have a sword and you will have to kill them. If you don't, you'll be denying Jesus and you'll go to hell, end quote. After several years of having the picture of hell painted as literally burning but never dying for eternity, my little brain made the decision that I would have to disconnect from the brothers that I loved so much and to hope that I wouldn't see them on the battlefield when the time came. It destroyed my relationship with them. I wasn't able to get close to them again until I was an adult, and it wasn't until the last few years and lots of therapy that I was able to recognize the mental block that was still there after having left the church. I know it's hard to understand how someone could actually believe that shit. Okay, all I want to say is, girl, you were 6 years old. You were brainwashed. But then she says, I feel so stupid for allowing myself to be controlled like that. But the fear of hell and eternal damnation is crushed into your brain at such a young age. It's how the control starts. I don't know what Albert got out of the pain he caused, but it's clear that his motivation was a blend of sexual perversion and sadism. Unfortunately, he's still, quote, teaching. He's still influencing small kids. He's still causing pain. His daughter has been one of my closest friends since we met in that haunted church. His wife is one of my mom's best friends. I have more stories about Albert in my church, but I don't want to overload my brain and send myself spiraling, so I'll stop there for now. Then she says, feel free to use that however you want. Chop it up and paraphrase however you see fit. Guess what, Julia? I didn't chop it up. It was beautifully written. Great job. I feel like I have a full portrait of that scumbag. And aren't you curious as to, like, Greg, how... So she's still best friends with the guy's daughter and her mom's best friends with his wife? Like, how that...
Yeah. What? I mean, kind of like agony to
just not say anything?
To not say anything and...
Just like, how's Albert?
Well, it shows also just like the... Like, she's not away from this church. And it's really present in, I mean, her mom's life, friends' lives. I'm assuming they're still going.
Maybe. Yeah, I guess she didn't say if she left the church necessarily. I mean, I think she did. But, like, I guess they still have close friendships with the... And perhaps, honestly, we don't know, but maybe the wife and the daughter are, like, sort of... I'm not saying victims in, like, a serious way, but, like, victims of this guy's control. So, like...
Gonna have Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, like they gotta
that's what I'm wondering. I feel like this girl can see it for what it is now.
Yeah,
you know, and can see the forest from the trees, And she has to look on as she knows that her friend and her mom's friend are likely being some, you know, form of terrorized.
But how do you not bring it up? Like, even think about, like, if you've ever had, like, a falling out with a friend, but you're still friends with a friend that's still close with that person.
I don't know
example.
How I could be like.
Like, do you just have to be like.
So your dad used to tell me that I was going to be eternally damned if I didn't kill my brothers on the battlefield of Christ.
Yeah, and women are whores, but men can do whatever they want. So anywho, I don't know how
so
that...
So intense. I'm
I don't
quite...
know how that happy hour goes down.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think they have happy hour.
No, they're not Mormon. Also, okay, so we're covering some crazy Mormon shit in season 3. A lot of them drink and stuff. I thought that was like rule number one. No caffeine, no alcohol. No, a lot of them are like.
I think it totally depends on, yeah, the
sect of.
The sect of Christianity. I mean, the Catholics are definitely like, gamble, drink.
Oh, yeah. Well, they can't have
come
a lot.
To church
so.
On Sunday and repent. it's get fucked up all week. So long as you come in on Sunday, you're free to go. Christ stamps your permission slip.
Your priest
sins
might be
forgiven.
Drunk at the time. If I was a priest, I'd probably be
hey,
drunk.
Hey, last church really serving real wine in
that's true.
Church.
Oh, that's lovely.
I just can't believe how intense, like...
Being 6 years old?
Yeah.
And then it, that someone being like, even just talking about like rape and sex and things, like...
Yeah.
I actually don't even have
like,
a memory...
Like the fear of God is for like adult men.
Yeah, and
you know,
women,
if you do...
Yeah.
Well, sure, but like... You know, if you do wrong, nothing can be stronger than, you know, the wrath of God.
But not a six-year-old.
But yeah, I think you should be teaching a six-year-old the love of God. Like, you can do nothing wrong and he will still love you. Like,
yeah, just... and the golden rule, be good to people, you know?
Yeah, I don't...
Treat people nice.
I mean, I went to Sunday school when I was probably about six, and, like, the stories were very watered.
Lovely.
It was like a coloring book.
Yeah, it was lovely.
And just, like, Jesus loves you.
Yeah.
And when you get to heaven, it's going to be a party of like Chuck E. Cheese.
God, I loved
24/7.
I loved the Christmas Eve performances. Boy, did I dance like a little angel. My sister and I were both angels in like the
I'm not surprised. I'm sure you changed the story of Christ somehow. These angels weren't here.
They needed tap dancing.
Yeah.
So funny. Okay, so a little bit quickly. So in her email, she included the haunting of the Dungeness school. And all I can think of is Dungeness crab because I love food when I read Dungeness. But so basically, I took a few excerpts from here about the paranormal stuff. So the schoolhouse definitely has paranormal activity, but it's nothing to be afraid of. It's just another part of this wonderful building. So like Webster, I think it's from the Red Ball, Blue Ball, I don't. I cut that part out of the paranormal company that went and looked into it. But basically they said by listening to raw recordings for electronic voice phenomena, EVP, sounds found on electronic recordings that are interpreted as spirit voices, they heard communications from one or two children, a woman, and possibly a man mumbling.
Creepy.
Yeah, and they also... said while speaking to the alleged spirits, they reference artifacts such as a photo of a student named Catherine Monson, which is the first picture upon walking into the schoolhouse. This image was one of the items the team found the most response from. Some of the phrases they captured in the evening were "I'm here" and "don't know" in response to their questions. In their photos, the group saw orbs and white lights, which they said weren't caused by their cameras or other known sources. People assume they are a spirit anomaly. And possibly the most significant experience the group discovered was snapped in two photographs in a closet. In one image, a piece of AV equipment sits with a flat surface, but in the second image, the shooting into the mirror and looking into that closet, there was a reflection of a round figure that appears to resemble a head. Webster said she's still on the fence about the images. She says she has no logical explanation, though, and that Webster said that paranormal historians would refer to the images like this as shadow men, but they are typically attributed with evil. But she said she didn't feel that there was evil in there. And to, like, kind of, not double down, but to make their claims more accurate, prior to testing and attempting to communicate with ghosts, the team sets up multiple cameras in each room and tests the room's temperatures, visuals, and audios. They do like a test beforehand, so it's not, I don't know. They can't have like a false positive, I guess, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a control.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, a controlled setting.
Before they ask the ghost to come out?
I believe in that shit. Maybe, actually, okay, for this listener stories.
Where is the schoolhouse?
Sequim? I don't know where that is. I mean, I do believe in that shit, though. Like, okay, so I went to Charleston, and we went to the haunted jail in Charleston, South Carolina. And it's like super dirty, so there would be, you know, dust specks, you know, that you would catch that could look like orbs or whatever. So I'm taking photos, I'm filming videos, and it's one of the most haunted places in America. Tons of people died there. Okay.
Were you taking photos like as a paranormal researcher?
I was just a patron of
Instagramming.
No, I was actually, I didn't even know if I Instagrammed. I eventually did, I think, but I was just taking videos and stuff.
Got it.
Also, ghosts love me. I've had a few experiences. But anyways.
This is true.
So I took a bunch of videos and stuff, and then like reviewing them later, it's like, oh, is that an orb? Is that an orb? And then it could just be, you know, thrown away as like a dust fleck or whatever. And then in one of these videos, so it's kind of like white thing going, and then almost literally a perfect bright circle, and it moves differently. So I'm going to post this on our Instagram as like our promo for this episode. Follow us there. 7 Deadly Sinners Podcast. Is that what we are on Instagram?
Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, literally this bright circle that moves, like it stops. So it moves towards the camera, stops, looks at the camera, and then goes away.
Looks at the... I've seen the video. I don't know if it looks at the camera. It's definitely peculiar.
It goes... Well, you guys be the judge of it. It's so creepy. It does. It literally
I think
goes,
it's a haunted dust fleck.
It's not a dust fleck. It's an orb. Let the listeners be the judge.
We'll let the audience decide.
Yeah. No, it does.
The people choose.
It literally goes towards the camera.
Erratic behavior.
And then it goes away.
I think a much more profound experience caught on camera.
Is the one with Zach in front of the Queen Mary. Okay, I'll give you guys one more.
That one is, there's like
okay, I'll give you
one more. A spirit coming through the vent.
So on my birthday one year, my friends, so the Queen Mary is this like haunted ship in Long Beach, California, and you can stay on it. Well, there's a room that is now unmarked, but you can figure it out if you Google and, you know, find a map or whatever. But something really bad went down there, like murder, whatever. And, you know, we're all like drunk having fun, and we go and we find this room and we take a picture of my friend Zach standing in front of the door of the room. So I'll post this as well. Standing in front of the door of the room. And when you look at the photo, I mean, it is pure evil. It's like there's...
Ghastly.
It looks like... So there's like... they're not like vents with like air coming. They're just sort of like to vent, I think, the room. So there is kind
of like
a vent. It's
like janitorial closet vent kind of thing.
Yeah. So there's like a vent on each, you know, cabin door or whatever. But like near the vent coming out of the room, there is this horrific looking black mass that cannot be described.
Mist.
Yeah. It's like, it's not like a trick of light. It's not.
Yeah.
Because it's not light. It's a black.
It looks exactly what you think like a evil ghost in a horror film coming through the vent to come get you would look like.
It's horrifying. Hopefully Zach's not cursed. We made fun of him for forever. He's not. He's lovely. But I'll post that as well. Did you guys know that only 8%...
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply. All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Our next story is titled, He Truly Loves the Lord. I titled my email after what a dear friend said to me when I asked her how her boyfriend was doing. I love Jesus too, but this never sat right with me. He's her husband now, and boy, do I sure not like that. I haven't seen her but once at a party for a couple of minutes since her wedding, and she's never out of his sight. I suppose I will start at the beginning. I'm going to see a friend play music at a local establishment when I meet up with my friend who let's call Starry Eyes. She introduced me to a man I recognize from high school. Let's call him Ass Canoe. I like that name.
I won't forget this character. This is already really funny.
From the very first handshake, I felt like this guy was going to sell me a car or murder me. I've never felt faker in my life just from talking to someone. I go to Starry Eyes, and she tells me she met him at church. She is audibly swooning, so I ask if they're dating. She says, not yet, but we have all the time in the world. I ask, of course, for her to elaborate. Well, he's going through a divorce, so we are just friends. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I ask if she knows why they're getting divorced. She said she met his wife once at church, and she is cuckoo.
Oh, yeah. The other woman is always crazy.
It's always the other
one. Like, when the guy comes in, he's like, my ex is so crazy. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not bad that I'm dating you and not divorced.
The girl dating the married man's never cuckoo.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's also more just like this dude's like, I had to get away from the crazy woman.
My husband is off talking to Askanoo, and he asks him about our band. My husband talks about us a little, and then he asks if he's in a band. He says, I play enough to get by before getting on stage.
Oh my God.
This creeps my husband out so much, we leave, and he's angry crying, saying, why is he like this? Most of the way home.
You're in a band. How annoying is that statement? I play a little. I play enough to get by.
It's just...
And gets on stage for his, like... Keith Richards debut. Like, come on.
There's a little bit of
enough to get
Yeah, there's a little bit of cockiness that's like needed in being in a band. Like, I'm going on stage and showing you what I can do. Like, you don't want to be like so humble unless you truly are that plague genius who's like shy and afraid of the spotlight. If you're not afraid of the spotlight, it's okay. Just admit it. It's like,
but clearly he's not afraid of it. But I just think that like, I play enough to get by, boom, boom, go on stage, is annoying.
Well, that's probably how he got the name Askanoo. So let's continue on. The next couple years go like you think. My dear friend has less and less time for me. We used to go somewhere one of us had never been every month. Now we never hang out, unless it's at an open mic with her man. He goes through three musical acts in the 2 years we know him until... They're just a duo. No one likes working with him except his love. Askanoo is very interested in setting up shows with my band. So much so that he changes the subject when I bring up anything else. His singular focus is quite clear. I don't have the heart to tell him I can't make him famous. I see him crack once. I bring up an incident from a coffee shop when we were younger. He had been taking a long time to order, so I nicely said what coffee was good there. He had looked at me with a quiet menace and said, "Thanks for your opinion." That same quiet menace returned to his face when I brought it up again. It scared me. Well, the pandemic brought them closer, it seems. She told me they were engaged, and Starry Eyes put me on speakerphone without telling me. So I got to hear him unenthusiastically thank me for the well wishes. After speaking to her family, I am guessing he wasn't confident anyone would, which is why they surprise speakerphoned. The next day, I got an online wedding invitation for 3 weeks from that day.
That's not a good sign.
Never a good
sign. That's not enough time to know someone.
I was confused, sad, frustrated, and honestly, just done with this guy. But I wanted to stay a good friend and be there for her. So I did what anyone would do. Became friends with his ex-girlfriend and ex-wife on Facebook looking for answers. These women are both beautiful and have their own personality in life. But their stories with Askanu are similar. They spend a lot of time with him at church. They're isolated from people most of the time the longer they're with him. They grow to see their identity as being connected to him. But they also have stories of violence between him and family members. From the mother of his children, I heard the phrase, "It never got domestic, but there were threats." Oh yeah, about those kids. They weren't around in my part of the story often, but Starry Eyes seemed to become like a stepmom very quickly. Whenever I saw them, she was doing a lot of the mom stuff, and he was charming everyone before a concert they were going to play. I could go on forever, but this was long enough. I lost a dear friend to a narcissistic religious asshole, but the door is always open if she needs me. I don't trust this guy as far as I can throw him. I used to try to call and text her, but her writing style got awful.
Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your
Stop it! They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com, Cygnos.com, with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Fully similar to the way he used to text me about shows he wanted to do together. Maybe you will read this, and maybe you won't. But it felt nice to write it down because it took a while to process. I'm telling this tale to warn people out there that religion isn't bad, but it can attract people looking for others to control. I still have faith in God, but I refuse to trust any person who says they have all the answers.
Oh, couldn't agree with her more.
I love your podcast, and it did help me come to terms with this situation.
Wasn't she such a great writer in that?
A fantastic writer.
Like, so good. And I couldn't agree with her more. Like, I still have faith in God, too, but, like, yeah, no one has all the answers, especially in Askanu.
No question. No question in Askanu never has any of the right answers.
Do you know what this reminded me so much of? Do you remember the last few episodes I did of my other podcast, Be Here for a While? Which I'm not trying to like pitch you to go listen to it. It's more. And actually, you're better off listening to this girl's story. She did a full, like, I don't know, maybe 7-part series on the brilliant podcast, Something Was Wrong by Tiffany Reese. But I first heard this girl Sarah's story on that podcast, asked her to be a guest. She did mine. Mine was just a 2-parter with her, but she was basically engaged to a sociopath, like kind of a...
Oh, the guy who was inventing friends?
Yes.
Don't
say that. I want them to listen to it because it's one of the most fascinating stories I've ever heard. But it sounds a lot like Askanu, where it's like, oh, wow, the texts start to sound like him and she only can be around him with him there. And like things are like her personality is only defined by him. It's very, very creepy. And he was like, he would use scripture and God to kind of manipulate every situation. And it's an interesting story. So I encourage you either go or listen to both. Listen to the last couple episodes of Be Here for a While, my podcast, or the full series. I think it's the first season of Something Was Wrong, and it's with Sarah. She's a beautiful, funny, smart girl who got duped by a sociopath and Who among us hasn't? Are you looking for a better way? Okay, so I had posted something on Instagram stories asking for your listener stories. And one of my best friends, Kristen Doty, responded and she was like, well, I don't think I should say the multi-level marketing scheme that's similar to Nexium, but without the sex stuff. Maybe you can guess. Maybe you can't. I don't know. But she responded immediately with the thing she went to. And I was like, oh my God, I like, you know, we've been friends for like 12 years. And I remember when she first moved to LA, her going to this thing. And I didn't know, like, we've never really talked about it since. But I was like, yeah, well, do you want to send me like an email with the story? And she was like, well, I wrote like a whole chapter on it in her book. Her book's called He's Making You Crazy. And great book. It's written very funny. And so I was like, well, can I read the portion of when you went to this cultish thing? And she was like, absolutely. So I'm just going to share a portion of her story from, you know, what the one of these multi-level marketing scheme things that seem like self-improvement that really are kind of basically like corporate cults in a weird way.
Corporate cults.
Yeah.
It's a good way to frame it.
Yeah. So her chapter is called The Cult Classic. All right. So she says, the search for enlightenment takes center stage in your 20s because this cannot possibly be it. I was broke, living in a tiny apartment, no real food, staying up all night and sleeping all day. I couldn't even afford a $5 footlong at Subway. I started questioning everything. What's life all about? This question becomes the central topic of many late night epiphany, including conversations. Those nights, I thought I had cracked the code, which became groggy mornings where I couldn't remember anything. There has to be more, right? Luckily, in Los Angeles, it seemed like everyone was on a journey to find true enlightenment. Mostly, we told ourselves that if we gave up just one three-day weekend of wine and weed, we would be healed. Personally, I tried everything. Self-help books, yoga, incense, crystals, incantations, the artist's way. I left no stone unturned, because that would have been bad feng shui. Even, as it turns out, a cult. So, basically, I started dating this guy. He was in a cult. It is Los Angeles, after all. It seemed pretty culty to me, anyway, but I didn't know for sure at the time. He was so very even-keeled, loved to communicate all of his feelings, and said things like, quote, you don't make a decision, you make a choice. He advised me to, quote, create my own possibility. We never fought. Not because I didn't try, but because he refused to. Even when I was hangry or PMSing, he always had this unwavering namaste attitude. Eventually, I told him that his refusal to engage in arguments was making me feel insane. His solution? He enrolled me in a cult. An intensive weekend of self-discovery. I should have told him to go straight to hell, but then he promised that after my graduation from the weekend course, he'd take me on vacation with his family in Palm Springs. I had been dying to go to Palm Springs and to meet his family. The course was a three-day program in the middle of nowhere near LAX, with roughly 110 people in my class and two leaders who everyone said they were the best coaches the program had to offer. I was going to be transformed, allegedly. 6 a.m., I was nervous. I wasn't sure what to expect. This is day one of the cultification of Kristen, but I was determined to start with an open mind. Mr. Namase assured me that the 12-hour days would be illuminating. 12 hours? Pretty sure I was going to end up stabbing myself in the eye with a fork. Was I going to get a lunch break or any break at all? Was starvation one of their tactics? God, I resonate with you so much, Kristen. I was about to find out. He dropped me off on the curb at a nondescript office building, and I stood there feeling like the first day of kindergarten when you watch your parents drive off, afraid it's the last time you'll ever see them. The room was cold. Only rows and rows and rows of chairs, fluorescent lights overhead, and water. That was it. I spotted an empty seat in the back row and sat between two middle-aged men, smack dab in the heart of their midlife crisis. One of the leaders immediately put me on blast for being late. I was 2 minutes late. He argued I was not present. Excuse me? Calm down, I'm here. I'm literally present. Was Palm Springs really worth this insanity? what I had gotten myself into. We were given limited breaks, limited food, limited access to the real world. There were people there more than twice my age with a lifetime full of regrets they wanted absolved. I quickly knew I didn't belong there. During the first group exercise, I beelined for the only girl my age I could find, and thank God we immediately bonded. She was from Michigan too. To this day, she is one of my besties. I was happy that my new friend still had one foot firmly planted in reality with me, so that we could endure 72 hours of brainwashing together. But I will admit, by the end of the day, I had witnessed a few of the other students having real breakthroughs and wondered if some of these teachings could potentially benefit me. Then, it was cultivation of Kristen day two. I woke up somehow refreshed, feeling ready to take on the world. Was this program actually working? I couldn't wait to get back to that gray industrial park and meet up with all the other lunatics I had come to love in only 12 hours. What they try to etch into your brain is this. You know what you know, you don't know what you don't know. And apparently, what I knew in my past didn't happen the way I thought it did. Now I needed to know what actually happened. They talked a lot about pre-existing notions, complaining, being detrimental to your success, the difference between what really happens versus what your story is. I only remember any of this because I did exactly what they instructed us to do. I took notes and wrote it all down and read it later. On the first day, I had barely paid any attention because it was just some stupid cult, but now I was fully present. And then, day three. Mr. Namaste and I were now speaking the same language, and he was so proud of me. My homework that day, on our only break, was to write a letter to someone toward whom you still felt resentment. She chose Lip Freckle Dude, and she says you can go back to his story, but I know who this guy is. Basically, it's someone that cheated on her and did really bad things to her, but she was encouraged to write a letter to move on, forgive him. So basically, she writes this letter saying, like, Dear Lip Freckle Dude, but, you know, his name, she probably put in there. It's been years since we've spoken. I wanted to share some things with you. I wanted to take the chance to express how I've been inauthentic with you over the last 7 years. Until this last weekend, I've been blaming you for so many things that weren't your fault. And the cheating incident and all that. So she's basically taking ownership of him cheating on her, blah, 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 blah. So she ends the letter with love, Kristen. She had become Mrs. Namaste, she thought. She said she thought she'd found enlightenment. And then she received his letter back. Dear Kristen, what am I supposed to say to this? I'm glad you could put me down to my friends to make yourself look good, thereby ruining many of my friendships. I forgave you a long time ago. Every day we were together, I had to forgive you just to look at you. It goes on to be incredibly more insulting. And this is a guy who, I know the full story, cheated on her. She had to catch him in bed. Not a great guy. Okay. So Kristen goes on now in the book to say his reply was just cruel. Okay, maybe I said my apology wasn't seeking a response, but subconsciously I was. He didn't take an ounce of responsibility for what he had done, and honestly, he was the one who should have been apologizing to me. He downplayed everything he ever did to me. I was hoping to mend the fence and move on without regret. I wanted to wash my hands of this past relationship. Maybe he was right. I shouldn't have sent it. He is the only one who should have sent me the apology letter. He didn't say that. She's saying that. The cult made me feel like this situation was my fault, that my feelings were something I'd made up in my head. The cult was a sham. I don't know how I fell for it. Actually, I do. I was young, still trying to learn what being an adult even meant. I'd been skeptical, but in the classes I felt like maybe they were helping me navigate that. But at the end of the day, it was just a pyramid scheme. They didn't care about my self-growth. They were concerned with spreading the word and expanding their wallets. Thanks, Mr. Namaste. And then to end this, I just texted her to confirm that this was the story about this cult, just double checking, even though it clearly is. And she was saying how much it swayed her that, like, 3 weeks later, she was waitressing at the restaurant she worked at, sir, and she had like a hard day and she started crying. And then she beat herself up further, being like, I lost everything that I learned at that seminar. Like, I'm like, she started to beat herself up more and more and more, being like, I didn't follow the, you know, the cult's mantras. So yeah, there's that.
Protocol. They try to program you to need them, to need their ways.
Yeah.
And if you're just being human,
yeah, it's not okay.
Being emotional, you're just not properly installing their new software.
Exactly.
At the convenient price of $299 per year
so
weekend.
So expensive. I actually know people that had gone to this same thing as kids, like their parents had gotten into it, and so then they were sent to it, who have like severe trauma to this day.
I think there's something to be said about our first story, mm-hmm. or maybe it wasn't the first one.
Which one?
Well, the one I read.
Okay. The Jesus, he's so close to the Lord, or he truly loves the Lord.
That you can never be too sure of someone who has all the answers.
Exactly.
Like, I think the people who I've always resonated with are ones who tell me, like, life's a great mystery, you'll never figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, but with that knowledge,
yeah.
equipped with the fact that you don't know why you're here and you never can figure it out, there's some great advancements you can make while you're here.
Mm-hmm. Or kind of like what we talked about, I think, in the second episode, or maybe first episode on Columbine with Eric Harris's personality, where like there was so much arrogance. I was saying, like, it's great to be confident, but like we all need a certain level of insecurity, or like being unsure, like that you have to not think you have all the answers and you're the smartest person in the room. Otherwise you completely lack empathy towards others.
Yeah, absolutely.
Harvest.com.
And our last story, last but not least, is from Zelda. So this was titled Columbine Aftermath, listener story-ish. Not sure how to start this, but I do want to tell you I'm a huge fan of your show and the research you do.
Thank you, Zelda. I actually used one of Zelda's suggestions for our last Columbine episode.
Came in handy.
We hear about in this email.
Okay, here we go. 2019 marked the 20-year anniversary of the shooting. Being the fetus that I am, I was in my freshman year of college. As you could imagine, living in Colorado at the time meant it was everywhere. At the time of the shooting, I was not quite out of the oven, a literal fetus, if you will, so I grew up in the aftermath. I went to school in the age of gun violence and school shootings. Mass shootings became a yearly given. My heart breaks thinking about it. Just a bit more background, I have PTSD, it isn't related to shootings, but it definitely sets off my anxiety, and it's just a bad time. In middle school, my school had a bomb threat. I mean, are you really in a public school in America if you didn't have one? My school had one.
Yeah, well, after we read this email, remember I was like, gosh, I can't even imagine growing up in the era of school shootings where these things happen, and then I was like, oh, I did, but I'm just from a hick town where, like, they didn't prepare us.
Your school was just way too small.
My town had my high school had, like, 200 people.
They were taking water out of the well to wash their hands in the bathroom, folks. Anyhow, let's continue
on. So, no, I don't
on.
Necessarily remember one of those because we didn't have much going on.
Yeah, they had horse stampede threats. Yes. Anyhow. Then there was the Aurora shooting. Both my aunt and uncle, and basically my siblings too, were almost at that theater. They both decided last minute not to go. The next morning, I got a call from my out-of-state grandmother, making sure we were okay.
Can I interject really quickly? Did you feel like, I remember the Aurora shooting. I don't think I went to a movie theater for probably years afterwards. That scared me so much.
I can tell you that since then, I definitely always look at the exits
mm-hmm.
and think, like, could I get there? Would I get
what
there?
Would I do?
What
do
would
I
do?
Do I duck behind the seats? What do you do?
It's
I've almost hated movie theaters since then. It's really weird. Partially, it's because I'm a workaholic and I can't sit there for very long, but it's
this
also...
This is true. You can't watch a whole movie.
No, but it's also... I wouldn't go for a long time after that.
I believe it. And the home theater has since kind of almost taken out
yeah,
movie theaters.
True.
But I mean, it has become a commonplace behavioral habit of mine
mm-hmm.
to the moment I sit down in a theater. Unfortunately, my brain is triggered to be like, where are the exits? You know,
horrifying.
Where am I in the rows? And I think I've tended to not sit, you know, in the middle like I used to want
mm-hmm.
to because I, you know, quick access. That's just
totally
terrible.
It's terrible. Anyhow. So we feel for you, Zelda.
Still in middle school, 8th grade, I get to my history class and the teacher is acting kind of strange. He says something bad just happened and he thinks it's important for us to know. That afternoon, we watch the news and the aftermath of Sandy Hook. I remember vividly some kids talking and I yelled at them. I told them how inappropriate it was to be talking and giggling at a time like this.
Good for you, Zelda.
Sophomore year, a school maybe 20 to 30 minutes away, there was a shooting. Marysville Pilchuk. I guess it's the name of the school. I didn't know any of the victims, but my friends did. Then there was the shooting at the university in Seattle. My dad was working a block away and watched the cops and everything unfold. My junior year, Pulse.
The nightclub in Orlando. You know, you remember. I think it was Orlando.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
In Florida.
My A-push teacher also sat us down and she taught it like a historical event. Because it was. I have the newspaper from an LGBT publication from the day before. And now here we are, 2019. I had made it through my mandatory school years and I decided to go back. I was working in Denver when word came out that a girl from Florida, reportedly obsessed with the Columbine shooting, had flown to Denver, bought a gun and ammo, and went MIA. It was reported she had tattoos of the boys from the security camera. Her journals were coming out, and let me tell you, yikes. Schools went on lockdown, and then some schools closed. My school decided to stay open. But she still wasn't found, and it was the day of the anniversary. I made a decision to miss my classes for the day. I cannot begin to explain the anxiety and overwhelming sickness I felt. She was eventually found. She was dead from an apparent suicide. I felt sick going to school following that. I was outraged my school decided to stay open and didn't want to protect us.
Remember, that's Sol Pais that we covered in the last episode. And Zelda, I had kind of sort of seen that story, but I wasn't necessarily sure I was going to cover it until I got Zelda's email. And I was like, that clearly rocked a lot of people. So, yeah.
I can understand how it would.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Less than a month later, the STEM school shooting happened. My brother had just graduated in 2018, and the resemblance between him and Kendrick are uncanny. Not only did they look similar, but the same age, and they were in the same clubs and classes. I did go to the memorial services for STEM. I felt the static and tension in the air, the sadness of another generation being raised in an age where we lose our friends to bullets in our schools, where we are taught how to barricade a door properly and hide just as much as we are taught to hide under our desk with a book over our head for an earthquake or tornado drills. Anyways, I just wanted to share. Thank you for reading my ramblings.
Another brilliant writer. I feel like every email has been so great.
What's wild about Zelda sharing her 1 or 2 degrees of separation from multiple mass shootings is that the Boulder shooting at King Super's grocery store this week
happened would Monday.
Prove to be no different.
Yeah.
She had a friend who was working there.
Yeah, so I emailed Zelda today before we recorded this, and I was like, hey, is it okay if I, you know, share your story, blah, 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 and she emailed back and said that her story's been updated a bit.
It's wild that your relationship to mass shootings or serial killer shooting sprees can be updated.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, perhaps all of us are a degree of separation. Although I feel like she's really close to like a lot of them.
It is strange, the coincidental.
Her friend's okay though. You know, she isn't, and her friend hasn't talked to any media or shared what happened publicly. But she said she made it out physically okay. But I honestly can't even imagine the trauma.
Oh no.
Her friend must feel, and I mean, my heart goes out to all of the family's victims, the victims that just.
It's wild what the proximity of an event like this can do to you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, it's weird. You don't, it's not that you want to feel a relation to it, but you do. I mean, we're in Colorado right now.
Yeah.
And Boulder is hours away.
Yeah.
But just seeing Boulder, Colorado, you know, in the news for an event like this, it makes you stop and think that, like, is anywhere safe?
Yeah. I think that people tend to, like, there's a tendency sometimes to be like, oh, this person just wanted to make it about them. But
truly, that's not the case for like someone like Zelda, or like when you do feel close to, you know, I guess the only example I can give is when I narrowly missed several of those things, like the Bataclan Theater thing in Paris when I was doing that USO tour. Like, yeah. And I had no idea I was that close because it was the first time I'd ever been to Paris. But my uncle that lived there, I checked in on him. It was a week after I was in that spot performing a door over from there in just this little cafe. I checked in on my uncle and I was like, are you okay? The thing just happened. He goes, you realize you were just, you were there. You were.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. And like, yeah, that makes it seem like I'm making it about me. But like, no, it kind of makes you feel really like, oh, why, like.
I know someone, dance
or
with
I was
death.
I was so close to that. Like, I mean, I don't know if Zelda's story is that she is. I think she is closer to a lot of these, but I also think it is just a sign of like how much this stuff happens.
It's a good timestamp. It is. I mean, just reading through that, it's like wow. Like it has become all too common.
Yeah.
And then it starts to build up as she ages in her story, as she gets older. It's like there's another one and another one, and I lose track of them. It's like I haven't heard of that one.
That's how I felt too. I was like, I don't think I know the STEM one. I don't know the University of Seattle, and I feel bad. Like, but that's what's so sad too, is that like we forget them because they keep happening, so you forget about them. I just can't believe her friend was at the most, was working in the grocery store of the most recent one. Like,
yeah.
Zelda, we love you. Thank you for sharing your story. And thank you, all of you guys, for sharing your stories.
We're glad you and your friend are safe.
Yes.
And our hearts go out to those who weren't. Absolutely. This week.
Well, yeah. I mean, and the Atlanta shoot, it's just so much. Yeah. It's too much. But anyways, try to end it on a happier note. We love you guys. Stay tuned. I'm not lying. I know season two was nuts. Season three's getting.
If you liked season two.
Oh no, season three
stick
is.
Stick around.
Like I do all like the like I find the cases, do the research, and then I present them to Greg. And wouldn't you say you've been kind of like, okay,
you
this
keep
is a lot.
Up in the ante. I'm now worried for your well-being and my own. But
we'll be fine.
Some people need to be taken down.
Yeah, we'll be fine. I almost backed
out. We're well armored here in
Colorado. I just don't see where we are. But we don't always live here. But I almost backed out of one of them.
And we're constantly moving, so they can't find us.
There you go. I almost backed out of one of them, and then I was like, if ABC News has covered it, if some of them are already in jail, I'm fine.
Yeah, because ABC News doesn't have more resources than us. Just stay safe.
Whatever. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you.
Thank you for sharing your stories.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Please keep sending them.
Yeah, 7deadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
Seven Deadly Sinners was written and created by me, Rachel O'Brien. Research and writing assistance by Kate Codman. Sound engineering and music production by Greg Hunter. And produced by Rachel O'Brien and Greg Hunter. Thank you for listening.